You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is... Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Julie Clark on the show with me today. She has a phenomenal new novel that's out just recently. It's called The Last Flight, and this is an amazing book that you need to have on your summer reading shelf. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. Julie, we begin each show with the same question, and that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
I think it goes all the way back to elementary school. I used to write stories for fun. I'm a Gen X kid, so we had a lot of unstructured playtime.
Oh yeah.
And writing stories and reading stories was always something that I really enjoyed doing. And I remember my earliest story I wrote for my dad, and it was for his birthday, and I think he was turning like 40 or something. And I wrote a really sad story about an old man who is visiting the grave of his beloved wife. It was very depressing. It was sad and tragic, I thought it was. And I couldn't understand why when he read it, he laughed and laughed and laughed. You know, I thought, this is a tragedy. Why are you crying? Why are you laughing? But, so I think the idea of myself as a writer probably began then.
Do you, when your dad had that response and, you know, it was not the response you were expecting, but it was a pretty visceral response. How did that make you feel? And did it solidify something in you that, you know, I got a response from someone, even if it's not the one I intended?
I think so. I also was the kind of kid who wanted to say things to get reactions out of adults, especially. I wanted to sound smart and deep and insightful. And so I was pretty used to not getting the response that I wanted to get, because I think adults at the time found me kind of precocious and cute. But I don't remember it discouraging me. I remember thinking, well, that didn't go the way that I wanted it to go. But, you know, shrug, move on, you know, write the next story.
Did you ever have a teacher who saw this storytelling gene in you and gave you any encouragement?
I think my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Murray, did, but I also know that my high school English teacher, Carol Jago, was instrumental in giving me some of the tools that I still use today to write. She introduced the idea of stream of consciousness journaling, which is really how I figure out every single plot hole that I run into or writer's block that I struggle with. I'm back in 10th grade, just journaling out ideas, solutions, and it's like having a conversation with yourself. So I definitely credit her teaching and sort of giving me some of the tools that I use every day now.
Ray Bradbury talked a lot about the sort of stream of consciousness journaling. Would you talk a little bit about your process and how that kind of factors into your writing?
Sometimes I don't know how to solve a problem, or I don't know how to get a character from point A to point B. And it seems really high stakes to open up my laptop and start typing into a manuscript, because I'm afraid to delete something that doesn't work, or I'm afraid to add something that won't work. And so what I'll do is I'll open up a notebook and just start writing what I'm thinking. And it's very low pressure for me. So it's not that I'm working on the book itself. I'm writing about the work on the book, which starts out very much like complaining. I don't know what to do. And this, I don't know where to go. And, you know, it would be almost like calling up one of my writer friends and saying, help, you know, except for the person on the other end of the line is me. So
it's like having a conversation with your subconscious.
It's very much like that. And what I find happens is that pretty soon I start writing about my characters. Well, she would do this, or she would say that, or she might try this, or she might wonder that. And then before I know it, I'm actually back in the story again, drafting longhand. And at that point, I quickly jump over to my computer and get to work. But that's normally how I solve problems.
Now, Julie, are you a plotter or a pantser, if we you know, kind of divulge down to those diverge down to those two camps of people that plan out a novel beforehand or write by the seat of their pants?
I cannot commit to either one of those, unfortunately. Yeah. I like to think of myself as a plotter, and I do a lot of outlining and a lot of planning and mapping. And I have a really hard time working off of that. So I use that more as a way to kind of tell myself the story, and then I'm ready to go in, and I never end up looking at it again. And I think, why did I spend days and days on that? I haven't even looked at it in a month. And then I do look at it and I think, well, that's not at all what I've written. What was I thinking? But I do think that the outlining is sort of a jumping off point for me. But I very rarely stick to it. I've always hated outlining, and I've always hated working from an outline, whether it's a, you know, 11th grade history report or a novel. I just resist against it. But I do know that it has a value, and it does help me sort of think through the main plot points, the beats of the story, you know, what's my first turning point? What's my midpoint? What's my all is lost moment? I do think a lot in terms like that.
Yeah.
Julie, when, what did you study in college, and what did you have planned, for a career before, fiction writing took over?
I was a graphic design major in college. I have a BFA in graphic design. I used it for maybe a year and realized that I was not at all cut out for that kind of career, that industry. I just didn't have the competitive edge that a person needed to succeed in the design field. So I went into collegiate athletics, which, of course, it's an obvious leap, right?
Right.
The collegiate athletics. My best friend at the time, her dad was the athletic director at University of California, Berkeley. And so, you know, I got a job through him and worked in fundraising for 4 years and loved it. It was basically an extension of college for me, without the papers and the midterms and the finals. So it was great. And it was a fun place to be. I love Berkeley. Go Bears. But it wasn't really a long-term career for me. So I started thinking again, well, what do I want to do with my life? Where do I want to settle? At that point, I was 28. And I decided I wanted to get my teaching credential and teach elementary school. So I went back to school and got my credential and moved home to Los Angeles. And I've been teaching here ever since for the last 23 years. And I didn't start writing novels until I was probably 44. And about that time, that same best friend whose dad got me the job at Cal, she unfortunately passed away from breast cancer. And it really was a huge wake-up call to me of the idea that I can't just sit around and wait for my dreams to come true. I have to make them happen. I need to get to work on that. My boys, I was a single mom at the time. I had two little boys, but they were now sleeping through the night. They were preschool and kindergarten age. And they were sleeping through the night. And so I finally had the energy to sit down and write a novel. And it was just so much fun to every night sit down and think, well, what's going to happen next? And it was very low stakes. It was very, you know, I didn't know where it was going to go, and I didn't know how it was going to do or if I was even going to go anywhere with it. But I finished it, and it was just such a huge accomplishment. So many people sit down to write novels and they never finish them. And so I just started piecing together a writing career at that point, researching agents, figuring out what kind of publishing career I wanted to have, and working hard toward that goal.
Did that book that you wrote during those low stakes periods, did that become The Ones We Choose?
No. That book went nowhere. Which is, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say it will never go nowhere, but I haven't looked at it in a long time. So I'm thinking probably not. When I realized that book was not going to go anywhere, I sat down and wrote another book, you know, which was sort of my plan all along, was I'm not going to write one book and then sit back and hope that it hits big. My plan was, I'll write a book, and if it doesn't do well, I'll write another book. And if that doesn't do well, then I'll write another book, because I had figured that I'd done it once, so I certainly could do it again.
Are you ready to read? Telltale Press specializes in the four main genres: fantasy, horror, mystery crime, and science fiction. We have free short stories to read online in our library, and we're known for our genre fiction anthology series. We're currently on Volume 3, Naboo Carnival, now available for purchase in paperback and on Kindle. Our first novel by our talented author Jason J. McHouston is Project Notebook, an alternate history take on the Maury Island UFO incident in 1947. An elite team of World War II veterans are assigned to investigate the case and the mysterious men in black and find more than they imagined possible. Telltale Press, where genre fiction for readers, editing and publishing for writers. Visit us at www.telltalepress.net. That's T-E-L-L-T-A-L-E, press.net. World Anvil is a browser-based world-building platform designed for all world builders, writers and novelists, dungeon masters, game developers, and everyone else. World Anvil keeps your world setting safe and organized, helps you find your characters, locations, plots, timelines, and maps quickly and easily as you write. Then, if you choose, you can showcase your amazing world building to the world, beautifully and interactively, to keep your readers engaged. You can even use our professional tier to build your career, selling access to behind-the-scenes content your readers will love, and growing your community. Build your world setting in any genre with over 25 custom-built world-building templates, complete with prompts to inspire your creativity. Allow your readers to explore the public parts of your world in an innovative new way with interactive maps, timelines, and wiki-style articles. Give special access to co-authors, beta readers, customers, or patrons to see exclusive behind-the-scenes content. There's a free version to get started with all of the major features. Guild membership offers you a host of extra options, including comprehensive privacy settings, co-authors, presentation options, and so much more. Join our community of over 800,000 world builders, including professional authors. Take part in competitions and learn more about world building at this fantastic online community. Use the coupon code HANK to get 20% off all 6 and 12 month subscriptions. WorldAnvil.com. I'm a recent convert, and I know you will be too. I think everyone has a desk drawer novel or two or three.
Yeah,
that's where you learn to the craft of writing is by doing it. You can take all kinds of classes, but until you go through the process, I don't think you understand the process until you've done it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the Ones We Choose was the first book that you published. How did that book come about, and how did it come out to the world?
I was very much interested in telling a story about a single mother who was single by choice, not by death, not by divorce. I felt I, you know, all around me, I know women are making that choice for themselves using a sperm donor to conceive a child because their life circumstances are such that, you know, that is the best decision for them. And I was a single mom through divorce, but I often, you know, looked on with incredible, like, I was just so impressed by the way some of these women were just making this decision for themselves. But at the same time, I also know that the things that we do to maybe protect our children, my main character, Paige, decided to become a single mother because she didn't want her son to have the heartbreak that she had had, the disappointment that her father had created in her life as a child. She wanted to save her child from that kind of heartache. But as we know, you can't really protect your kids from trauma. You can't protect them from disappointments and pain. And so her journey was really one of accepting that, you know, her son was going to have these moments and have these disappointments, and that she can't sort of orchestrate his life in a way to make it easier for him. That doesn't always work.
Yeah. You telling the story of writing before you were published, and you know, that it being a low stakes time. We talk a lot on the show about the gift of anonymity, the those times when you're writing that first book and no one knows that you're doing it. You know, maybe there's a family member or a friend or something, but you know, for sure the book industry doesn't know that you're doing it. That there aren't fans out there that are, you know, waiting with bated breath for the next thing from you. And it's a time that you can never go back to. Because after that, then, you know, there are people watching and there are people expecting things and all of that. Your new book, The Last Flight, is a complete departure, from your first book, from what I can tell. Tell me about writing this book and what was it like to follow up, you know, the first book with something new, and then, you know, how does that change your creative process when you already have a book out?
Yeah, this book is very different from my first book, and I'm really lucky that I get to work with people who support whatever creative ideas I have. My literary agent is brilliant at what she does. And I had questioned her early on and said, you know, can I follow the first book with a book that's kind of a different genre? I mean, they both have that propulsive page turning element to them, but The Last Flight is most definitely a straight up, you know, domestic suspense slash thriller. And the ones we choose, maybe if you look at it sideways and blur your eyes a little bit, could be considered some domestic suspense, but not really. And her response to me was, you know, you just write the book you want to write and let me worry about selling it. And it was the greatest gift that she could have given me, because it really did give me the freedom to not worry about, you know, a previous audience or a genre, or, you know, I just got to write this book that I had been thinking about for a very long time. The idea of can you drop out of your life and disappear? And if so, how would you go about doing it? And why would you need to? And I played around with a lot of ideas and what would make sense and what would be believable, and came up with Claire and Eva, who have very different reasons for wanting to disappear out of their lives. The most important thing for me in The Last Flight was that I wanted to portray women as strong and smart, and, you know, that they would have advocacy for themselves. I didn't want anybody to be unreliable. I wanted the unreliable people to be other than my main character. I feel that the stories we tell about women these days are really important, and what we put on the page is important. So I wanted both Claire and Eva, even though their circumstances are difficult and challenging, and even though they both made decisions in their lives that maybe didn't lead to the best outcomes. I mean, I think we can all relate to that, but it's sort of that moment where you say, okay, well, you know, it's time to suck it up, buttercup, and get to work and get out of this situation. And that was really where I think a lot of the power came from, that neither of them are really victims.
You said that you had been thinking for a while about this idea of could you drop out of your life, and how would you do that, and why would you do it, and you know, how would you pull it off? Was that the initial thought for this book, or had you had the characters of Claire and Eva beforehand, and not didn't know what to do with them until this idea came along, or did you have the idea first and then Claire and Eva walked into the story?
I had the idea first, and I wasn't even sure how it would happen. My original idea was something about possibly centering my main character's disappearance around like a terrorist event where everybody assumes that she's dead. And then it evolved, and I can't even remember how it evolved to something else where I thought, what if there's somebody else that's willing to help her? And what if they decide to trade plane tickets? And what if something happens to one of the planes and the other woman is kind of set up with an identity and a place to go and limited funds? But, you know, I didn't want to make it too easy on her, and I didn't want to make it too permanent either. So I really wanted it to be a short time frame where my main character Claire is having to make a lot of decisions in a very short period of time with limited information. So all of those things sort of ramp up the tension.
Some of the best thrillers over the last few years, and especially when you start digging into like suspense thrillers and psychological suspense, have been women-centric books. How important is it that these kinds of stories are some of the most popular right now? And what do you think that says about the reading population, that these are not only some of the best stories being told, but some of the best selling stories as well? Like, there's a real hunger for women centric thrillers right now.
I think that women historically have always been the center of the story. We've been the ones, you know, doing the emotional work for centuries, millennia. We're the ones that organize, we're the ones that coordinate, we're the ones that problem solve. And so it doesn't surprise me that we're in an era right now where women's voices are really becoming elevated and put into the spotlight in ways that we haven't seen before. I'm pleased by it. And I certainly want to write books that encourage strong women to say, yeah, I see myself in this book. You know, I teach elementary school, and middle grade and young adult fiction books are filled with strong female role models. And then we jump to the adult category, and we have a lot of unreliable female narrators that yes. sort of break down the whole idea of, wait, no, this is not the story we tell about women. I love reading those books. They are fun because I, as a reader, love being tricked. I love it when I don't see something coming. And I think that's the big appeal of the unreliable female narrator, of, you know, somebody that we think we can trust suddenly turns out that we can't. But I prefer the opposite twist. I like to think about, you know, can I trust this person? And then I realize, oh, I can. Oh, she is working with me. Oh, this is somebody that I can identify with. But I spend a lot of time telling my students, my female students, you know, you're smart, you're capable, you can accomplish whatever it is you want to accomplish, you can grow up and do great things. And I want to make sure that they do grow up and see, at least from me, that I'm putting those people on the page too.
Well, I think we all can think of an example of the unreliable female narrator. I think Gillian Flynn probably did that exceptionally well in Gone Girl.
Yeah.
And took us all by surprise and, you know, left us with our mouths agape. But, you know, you can really only pull that trick once, you know, and you can find different variations of that to do. But it becomes sort of tired when everyone starts doing it. And, well, I'm going to pull a Gillian Flynn, and, Okay, well, you start to see that coming. But I like what you said. I like it when I'm tricked into when the reveal is that this person knowingly did this and was in full control all the time. I think that is a great line to take because I mean that never gets old. We want protagonists that we can believe in, that we can cheer for, we can root for, and not just go for the easy cheap trick.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to say that when Gillian Flynn did that, it wasn't an easy or a cheap trick.
Oh,
Like the way
absolutely
that
not.
she,
It caught us
yeah,
all by
the way that
surprise.
she executed that was unbelievable. Like you just didn't see it coming. I think that is just so hard to do. And as a fiction writer, it's really the goal of every writer. You want to make sure that you are taking your reader on a ride of some kind, a journey. And it's not just an external journey. I think it needs to be an internal journey too. Those are the books that I like the best that have an outward plot that is engaging and riveting, but that also you have some emotional connection to the characters as well, which it's really hard to do when the main character is somebody that you know you can't trust.
Julie, when you had that moment of personal awakening when your friend sadly passed away, and you realized that you were going to have to make your dreams come true, did you set yourself a regimen as a writer? Do you have a daily writing habit? Are there things that you use to stay on track and to ensure that you are doing everything you can to make your dreams come true?
Yes, I am very dedicated to writing every day. There's really not a day that I take off. And the way that I do it is I get up very, very early in the morning. I wake up about 3:45 or 4 during the week and write for 2 hours until 6. And then at 6, I get ready, get my kids up, go to work. Because coming home after the end, after a long day of teaching, it's very hard to sit down. I don't have the mental energy to sit down and be creative in the evenings. So I really get the bulk of my writing work done before 6 a.m. every day and longer on weekends. And I don't wake up that early on weekends, but I spend probably 4 to 5 hours on Saturday and 4 to 5 hours on Sunday doing some kind of writing work, pushing forward to the next manuscript or working on revisions or any number of things, just journaling out problems that I'm having. So that's been pretty consistent since I started writing.
What are you working on now, Julie? Now that this book is out, and I know everyone's going to love it. There's links to it in the show notes of this episode. But when you turn in a project and you give yourself a little time to breathe and let your brain air out, how long does it take for that next story to rise to the surface?
The next story usually pops up midway through writing the story before it, and it just is an idea or something that I just start thinking about. And the book that I'm working on right now is about family secrets, and it's about a woman who is a writer whose father was a famous literary icon, and she's been guarding some of the secrets that he kept for so long. And it's domestic suspense in that we really see the effect that these secrets have as they pass down through generations, and how traumatizing it can be when you as a child are left with something that you should never have been left with. So it's still pretty early days though, so it could go anywhere.
I love it. I love it. The Last Flight, available everywhere now, wherever you buy books. Grab a copy. There's also links to it in the show notes where you can grab it from Amazon, Kindle edition, or hardcover. Julie, this has been so much fun talking. We're going to send everyone to pick up a copy of The Last Flight. If people are just learning about you and want to connect with you online, is there a place where they can find you?
Yes, I am everywhere. I am Julie Clark Books on Facebook. I am Julie Clark Author on Instagram. And I am J Clark Ab, A-B, on Twitter.
Excellent. We'll send everyone to see you. Julie, thank you so much for taking time to come on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
Authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website. Developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates, PubSite is the new easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. Build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web.